That's Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and this is the second narration taken from the book The Rebirth of England and Englishness, The Vision of William Barnes by Father Andrew Phillips. And in the last episode, we learnt why he wanted to take the English language back to Anglo-Saxon and remove all the Latin words from it. And that's much harder than it actually seems, and he had a particular method for doing this, and we're going to discuss the method that he used in this episode. We shall first take a look at the criticisms which have been levelled at William Barnes's word shapening. Then we will go on to see what is worthy of praise, and finally draw some conclusions. All commentators are of the opinion that once a language is dead, it cannot be revived. Given that this is so, it has to be conceded that once a root is dead, or no longer active in a language, then it cannot be revived either. It seems to us that this is the case with a number of Barnes's neologisms. For example, for conscience he has inwit, for epidemic he has manqualm, and for perambulator he has pushwainling. Wane and qualm are both dead old English roots which modern English has lost, although it may be argued that wit is still active. Inwit is perhaps, unfortunately, not a word which is going to live. Barnes's critics mostly consider that the revival of dead roots made Barnes's enterprise seem quaint or even cranky, and therefore many failed to take him seriously. Language is a living, organic creation. It cannot be artificially revived. This is perhaps the most serious accusation against Barnes, and indeed against anyone who wishes to fight for linguistic purity. The second criticism of Barnes is that in trying to de-Latinize English, he Germanized it. This is true as regards phrasal verbs, where often, though by no means consistently, Barnes, in German style, put phrasal verb particles in front of the verb instead of afterwards, as is normal in English. Thus, the Englandish would be accept, the English would be take in, and Barnes would say intake. The Englandish would be accumulate, the English would be gather up, and Barnes would say upgather. The Englandish would be contract, the English would be draw up, and Barnes would say updraw. The Englandish would be disseminate, the English would be scatter out, and Barnes would say outscatter. The Englandish would be elicit, the English would be draw out, and Barnes would say outdraw. The Englandish would be exhale, English would be breathe out, and Barnes would say outbreathe. Englandish would be reject, the English would be cast off, and Barnes would say offcast. Finally, the Englandish would be supervise, the English would be watch over, and Barnes would say overwatch. For some, Barnes got carried away with his word-making and invented words from Saxon roots to replace Latin vocabulary needlessly. There already existed words of Anglo-Saxon origin which were quite adequate replacements. Thus, he would come up with things like on quicken for the Englandish accelerate, or four elders when the Englandish would be ancestors. To attract, he would say foredraw. Beauty, he would say fairhood. Carnivorous, and he would say flesh-eatsome. To dissuade, he would say off-sweeten. Edible would be eatsome. False would be guilesome. Fragile would be breaksome. Grateful would be bethanksome. Herbivorous would be grass-eatsome. Industrious would be worksome. Instinct, ongoading. Liquid would be runsome. Necessary would be needsome. Vitreous would be glassen. Of course, the English for that would be glass. Glassy. Certain commentators have sought to discredit Barnes by pointing out that some of the words he invented contained Latin roots. Thus, for instance, for chemistry, Barnes produced matter law. Matter, however, does not come from Old English, but from Latin via French. Except in a very few cases, we utterly reject this accusation. Although Barnes worked before the Oxford English Dictionary appeared, it was published 2 years after his death, let alone other now standard reference works on etymology, his own etymology was very rarely incorrect. Indeed, he was one of the great pioneers in the field. Thus, Max Müller, who admired Barnes and came to visit him, was only just starting his linguistic investigations in Oxford. We cannot believe that Barnes was not aware, for example, of the etymology of matter. Indeed, the fact is that Barnes's neologisms, or recommended replacement words, often contained non-Old English roots. Thus, among his new words, we find airfarer, air meter, animal law, commonwealth, fable law, mock praise, rail end, speech tuning, stowcase, tooth doctor, all of which contain an English root and a Latin root. And we believe that Barnes was perfectly well aware of this. We would attribute this criticism of him not to false etymology, but to the academic's perfectionism. Barnes, though most learned, was not an academic. He did not conceive of an English language based on only English roots. As a linguist, he well knew that other Germanic languages, including that closest to English, Frisian, borrowed freely from Latin. He also well knew that Old English itself had borrowings from Latin or Greek, for example, church, bishop, priest, and school. Barnes did not want a fanatical linguistic purity. Indeed, he knew it was not possible. He could not himself find adequate substitutes for civilization, river, or superstition. What he wanted was a language where words of foreign origin would be dropped if fitting substitutes could be found, or, alternatively, if no substitute was available. Foreign words could be assimilated. This is what he was advocating with words like matter laura or tooth doctor. Such words sound English, even if they are not wholly English. Barnes wanted a faithfulness to Saxon English, not necessarily in letter, since this was sometimes impossible, but in spirit. This is why he was quite happy to put forward masterpiece as a replacement for chef d'oeuvre or masterstroke for coup de grace, though masterpiece consists of two words of Latin origin via French, it immediately sounds English, far more so than the purely French chef d'oeuvre. The same is true for masterstroke. With regards to this criticism of false etymology, let the academics put their dictionaries away and simply listen. The poetic genius of William Barnes, who saw through Englandish to the soul of English, to its old English Saxon roots, found words of much loveliness and spiritual depth. His technique was first to define the essence of a thing, and then find the words to express that essence. We greatly regret that words of his inspirational genius, such as those that now follow, have not been adopted into English speech. The Englandish would be recrimination, but English would be back-blaming. The Englandish would be developmental, and the English would be becomesome. Mythology would become fable law. Democracy would become folkdom. Native would become homeborn. Equerry would become horse thane. Optics would be light law. erudition would be lawcraft. A researcher would be a law seeker. A lecture would be law speech. And of course, I'm saying L-O-R-E there, not L-A-W, in law speech and law seeker. Prison would be mendstead. Imagination would be mind sight. Irony would be mock praise. Circumference would be rim reach. Encyclical, ring spell. Asylum, safe stead. Dormitory, sleep stow. Astronaut, starfarer. Constellation, star hoard. Astronomy, star lore. Plagiarism, thought theft. Estuary, tide fleet. Desecrate, unhallow. Sophistry, word cunning. Barnes's genius was unique in being not only inspirational, but also analytical. His approach to language was also the scientifically logical one of the philologist and etymologist. This meant that although Barnes is no longer physically alive, his system is, and it can be continued. Thus, from a substitute root word, other words can readily be formed. Thus, Barnes gives to wrangle to replace to argue. From this root, the present author has found wrangler, wranglesome, wranglesomely, wranglesomeness, unwranglesome. In the same way, from mason, or possible, we have unmason, masonly, masonness, unmasonness, which we think that the listener will understand. However, we deem that we can go further than this and find new words which Barnes himself never actually invented. Thus, the present writer does not think that he has been unduly free in putting forward the following words. Even though he has not found them in Barnes' works, he believes them to be in the spirit of Barnes. Air Force would become Air Fleet. Aristocracy, Etheldom. Astrology, Star Writ. Bilingual, twice-speeched. Biology, life lore. Cassette recorder, hear spell. Cautious, forewitsome. Choreography, dance craft. Computer, upthinker. Conscientious, inwitful. Conurbation, town cluster. Dialogue, tway speech. Engineer, ginman. Fallacious, flawsome. Fax machine, a far printer. Information technology, spellcraft law. Inimical, foesome. Lecturer, lore speaker. Lexicology, word law. Librarian, book hoarder. Modernize, benew. Monetarism, geld law. Patriotism, home love. Persuade, to forsweeten. Polytechnic, many craftstead. Prejudicial, foredeemsome. Telephone, far speaker. Television, far seer. Theology, god law. Topography, stead law. Urbanize, to betown. Video, sea spell. Video cassette, sea spell box. Video phone, sea speaker. You might be inspired to uncover other vocabulary in the same spirit. There are two shops in Barnes's own Wessex, one called Stitchcraft, selling sewing materials, and another called Timecraft, selling clocks, which does make me think that there are indeed others like-minded who can add to Barnes's own word hoard. Very few of Barnes's neologisms actually found their way into the dictionary. One exception is bendsome, whose meaning is surely at once clear. However, the writers of dictionaries do not count for much once a word is taken to the popular heart. Though long ignored by the compilers of dictionaries, skyline is now commonplace, and bird law is a usual enough replacement for the awkward ornithology. However, some of Barnes's successes have come among the English who emigrated. Freed of the constrictions of establishment English, Anglo-Norman Englandish, those who emigrated, perhaps especially to New England, were free to use their own speech. Thus, the English dialect fall of the leaf, gear, lonesome, and ongoing, now all common in the United States, were used by Barnes. Moreover, and this would surely delight Barnes, it is now common in North America to say mindset and not mentality, and stand out and not exception. Barnes would have appreciated sidewalk, and we have also heard sidewalker, a good Saxon substitute for pedestrian. The folk life of a younger people is giving utterance to Saxon English. Barnes would have been glad. Similarly, under American influence, we talk of a lone parent family rather than a monoparental one, Barnes's idea, and people power rather than democracy. Admittedly, the two elements in the latter compound are not English, but they do sound English. The unharnessed energy of English abroad has given us expressions such as Walkman, Watchman, and the World Wide Web, the latter of which, though resolutely modern, is all Old English alliteration and vocabulary. This New England Old English movement has also led to a partial denormanization of spelling. Barnes was very much against the untruthful spelling of English and would have approved of center, C-E-N-T-E-R, and not center, C-E-N-T-R-E. Defense, D-E-F-E-N-S-E, and not defense, D-E-F-E-N-C-E. Also, inquire, I-N-Q-I-R-E, rather than enquire, E-N-Q-U-I-R-E, the latter of which Barnes foresaw in his enthrall for enslave. This may sound meagre, but Barnes's greatest vindication is not so much here in the field of dialect words now become standard ones in at least one part of the English-speaking world, but elsewhere. It is firstly in the field of the phrasal verb and noun. Both existed in the Victorian period, but most were considered to be too vulgar to be used in literature. However, today, with the democratization of literature and the literary language and its closeness to the spoken language, phrasal verbs and nouns have become innovative and fertile forms of language. Thus, it would seem needless or even stuffy to use, accept, demand, denigrate, despise, endorse, extinguish, persuade, produce, and production, when they can be replaced by take on, call for, run down, look down on, back up, put out, talk out, off, turn out, and output. In a similar way, Latinate words, so popular in Victorian times, have indeed been replaced in many cases by English ones. The short Anglo-Saxon word is always preferable to the long Latin one. Thus, we say not ameliorate, deteriorate, emphasize, environs, precursor, ramifications or vicinity, but rather better, worsen, highlight, outskirts, forerunner, ins and outs, and neighborhood. In this respect, Barnes's most direct and successful heirs are the plain English campaign. And herein lies Barnes's ultimate victory, the triumph of plain English over complex and heavy Latinate English. It is a victory not of the exotic Manquam or Pushwainling, but a victory which is plain, fittingly discreet, almost unseen, like the man himself. Barnes's critics might at least concede the above. But even so, they would still no doubt continue to mock his more original neologisms. Who, they might ask, is going to call a university a lawstead or a bus a folkwain? But perhaps all this is symbolically significant. Perhaps, after all, there are things in our modern world that are so ugly that they only deserve to be called by ugly and foreign words. They do not merit to bear old English names. If the things themselves are spiritually foreign and ugly to us, then their names must also be spiritually foreign and ugly. It is no coincidence that one of the words that Barnes failed to English was civilization. He never managed to penetrate into the essence of the word and define its real meaning. Perhaps that is no surprise. When some 50 years after Barnes's death, Gandhi was asked what he thought of Western civilization, he replied that he thought it a good idea. Perhaps the civilization of the genocide, the atom bomb, and the ecological catastrophe simply does not deserve to be put into the fair speech of Old English. Over 40 years ago now, the only linguist to study Barnes in earnest, Willis D. Jacobs, concluded his William Barnes Linguist with these words. Out of the sympathy of his heart and the conviction of his mind, William Barnes presented the world with a number of revivified or devised terminologies which might serve in themselves and as a model for others to clarify education, help dissolve class snobbery, and reinvigorate the native genius of the English language. His work has been largely disregarded. His philological studies have been mostly ignored. With time, nevertheless, with continued research, the resources contained in Saxon English will be further revealed to the English-speaking world, and the treasure will be great. Over the years, William Barnes has been much mocked for his neologisms. Many have pointed to the German fascists and latter-day French chauvinists who have tried to nationalise their languages through force or legislation, and of course failed. Languages are living, and people will speak as they wish, no matter what the views of the political party in power or its lawmaking. Barnes, however, never forced his views on anyone. He merely put forward his ideas. And today, another writer is doing for another language much that Barnes tried to do for English over a century ago. Just as Barnes worked to save English from the results of Normanization, so today Alexander Solzhenitsyn is attempting to save the Russian language from the results of Sovietization, by collecting obsolescent and dialect words which may still be used to replace the Soviet Russian. Such efforts may seem doomed to failure. Barnes himself was openly pessimistic and did not think that much would be achieved without a radical change of heart. For only a change of heart leads to a change of values, and thus to a change of way of life, and therefore speech. Efforts to save a language may be but a sigh before the end of the world, but they may inspire the love of beauty. And that may, in turn, be just enough to inspire that very change of heart. The impossible is often the necessary.
On Radio Aryan.